tonight. The series moves to Simmons Field. Tonight, it's a 7:05 start. And, of course, Major League Baseball still in the All-Star break. Now, the forecast from the National Weather Service for this Thursday the 13th. The flood warning stays in effect till 5:45 this afternoon. Cloudy and warm, high today of 80. It's a muggy start to the day, humidity at 90%, 74 degrees. Both are seen in Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg, up next.
Support for the morning show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. Support for the morning show also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We're going to be having Nicole Thompson from Downtown Kenosha Incorporated on the program another day. That is an error on my part, and my apologies. Part one is going to be travel expert Rick Steves and a conversation we recorded some time ago about tips on traveling to Europe and experiencing Europe up close and personal. In part two of today's program, a preview of Always Patsy Cline, which returns to the Racine Theater Guild this weekend, 15 years after it was first presented on that stage at one of the Theater Guild's most triumphant successes. Stay with us. On several occasions, I've had the great pleasure of speaking with one of the best-known authorities in America when it comes to travel, and particularly world travel. And I'm talking about Rick Steves, and I'm sure many of you know him through his publications, through his presence on public television, or both. And I have in hand Rick Steves' Europe Through the Back Door, the Travel Skills Handbook 2015, his most up-to-date guidebook for traveling through Europe and traveling there in the style which he prefers, through the back door. And it is one way in which you can travel Europe a bit less expensively and, more importantly, experiencing Europe in a much richer, deeper, and ultimately more satisfying way. Rick Steves, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Thank you. Nice to be with you. And you summed it up quite nicely there.
And I especially have enjoyed reading this book, as everything else by you that I've read, in particular because the college where I work has the choir touring Spain right now. And so my mind is very much with my voice students that are in Spain right now, though they're about to come home. So
that's so great. So many universities are putting foreign study as part of a well-rounded higher education, and I just think that's a wonderful trend.
Absolutely. I want to ask you a couple of interesting things, about a couple of interesting matters and important matters. One of them, since a lot of your book is around the notion of traveling through Europe without incurring too much expense, is you say flat out, Europe is expensive. You just need to know that right off the bat. How expensive is Europe compared to the rest of the world? I mean, is it one of the most expensive places one can travel right now, or is it just a little more expensive than what we're used to here in America?
Oh, I would say it depends on the exchange rate. It's generally more expensive than America, but you know the euro is down about 20% on the dollar right now from a year ago, I believe, and this is wild how powerful the dollar is right now against the euro. So that softens the blow a little bit, But Europe is a very wealthy and successful part of the world, and it's as successful and expensive and comfortable and affluent as the United States. And it's just common sense that if you go to Los Angeles or if you go to Chicago or New York or Tampa, you can know how much you're going to spend when you go there. And, you know, high-rise hotels in Tampa and high-rise hotels in London will be expensive on either side of the Atlantic. The great thing about traveling in Europe is you have alternatives, and you can stay in people's homes. You can enjoy wonderful, innovative ways to sightsee that are, you know, museum passes and hop-on, hop-off bus tours and walking tours. Many of them are free, done by volunteers who are maybe retired teachers and so on that like to just keep active. And for me, one great thing about Europe is that some of the best experiences are absolutely free all over Europe. You've got wonderful free museums. It's kind of funny, depending on the government in some countries, how much their philosophy of museums. If you get a left-wing government, they're going to think, ah, the museums are for the people, and they open up and they're free. And if you get a right-wing government, everything's got to turn a profit, and the museums suddenly have a fee to get in. But across the board in Europe, you'll find that the high culture is something that's very accessible. In Vienna, they make sure that students can afford great live classical music, for example. So everywhere you go, what you need to do, though, is equip yourself with good information so you can expect yourself to travel smart. We Americans have the shortest vacations in the rich world, and we're always complaining about how expensive things are, which I think is kind of funny because we're filthy rich by almost any standard. But, you know, we've got limited travel money, and it's quite a splurge to go to Europe. And if we are using our money smartly and using our time smartly, we'll enjoy maximum fun for every mile, minute, and dollar in our trip.
Before I ask you a couple more things specifically about Europe, I want to explore a few of the basics of just traveling smartly and wisely, which probably are applicable to trips that you might take just about anywhere around the world. One of the most intriguing things about the way you write about this is the balancing act that you think people need to have between careful planning ahead of time versus being a bit spontaneous and flexible. And of course, at a glance, some people might think those two things just don't gel with one another. But of course, in fact, they do. Help us understand how one can and needs to plan ahead in a careful way and yet be spontaneous and flexible.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you can be spontaneous and flexible and in a chaotic mess with your itinerary and the way you use your vacation time. Or you can be spontaneous and flexible and well-organized in the way you use your precious vacation time. I think it's good to have to realize that the planning part of your trip is a fun part of the whole experience. And the more you plan, the more you know what your options are, you know what you want to do. It's so easy to leave a city not realizing that there was a wonderful museum that's just exactly about what you're all about. Maybe if you love pianos, you didn't realize you could go to a museum in Vienna where you could actually see and hear demonstrated the evolution of pianos from the very early clavichords and harpsichords up to the beautiful pianofortes that came after that. It would be a shame to learn about that after you left town. Maybe you're really excited about handbags. Well, there's a handbag museum in Amsterdam that's just wonderful. Maybe you've always been fascinated by leprosy, and you go to Bergen in Norway, and you leave the city, and you realize, oh, that's the city of where Hansen was working on treating leprosy, and there's a museum for the history of treating leprosy right there in Bergen. So all of these amazing sites are out there, and you need to know where they are and incorporate them into your itinerary. I think it makes sense these days to generally make reservations for hotels in advance. So you've got the parameter set, and then you can make reservations for the most efficient and economic transportation connections. But then within the confines of that or within the template of that, use your free time in a flexible way. To me, that makes a lot of sense. In this day and age, we've got a lot of crowdsourcing, TripAdvisor kind of sites where people are just enamored with this. Oh, what is everybody else doing? What's everybody else saying? I think there's a purpose for that, and it's a valuable service, but we have to be careful to try to curate all that data. If everybody's just throwing around opinions, it's important to have somebody who knows what the options are, who's been there many times, who understands the context of your needs. And that would be what you'd find, I hope, in a good guidebook, and that's what we try to do with all the Rick Steves guidebooks.
And, of course, one of the things you're also trying to help people experience that they otherwise might not is what you at one point describe as this kind of backdoor philosophy or traveling close to the ground. One point you say, connecting with people carbonates your experience. I absolutely love that turn of phrase.
Yeah.
So you're talking about getting off the main drags, off the beaten path, and experiencing, for instance, a place like Europe, in a sense, much more authentically than if you follow the herding masses to all the same tourist traps, so to speak.
Yeah, it's people that really does sort of carbonate your travel experience in so many ways. And if I'm making a TV show or writing a guidebook or leading one of our tours and I'm not connecting people with people, it's really, I'm nervous as a tour guide or a teacher. The mark of a good trip is how many people you meet. And when, in so many ways, a lot of us just see the cultural cliches on stage, go back to our low-stress, low-risk American-style hotel and talk to other Americans. That's not a very good job of traveling. I just have so much fun. You know, go to the bar or go to the pub in England. It's not like a tavern in the United States. It's the community living room in anywhere in Britain. And if you sit at the table, you'll be given privacy. If you sit at the bar, you will have friends all around you, buying you beers and telling you stories and wanting to hear your story. All across Europe, there are ways to connect with people. And Europeans are fascinated by Americans, and they're inclined to really like Americans. And we have a real advantage that way, and that's what brings back the best memories.
Hmm. We should say that your book outlines an 8-step process for building an itinerary wisely, and I think that in and of itself is an enormous help for any traveler. I wanted to ask you about something that I suspect has been in previous books, but I've never noticed it till I read this particular guide. Again, we're talking about Rick Steves' Europe Through the Back Door, the 2015 edition. You talk at one point about how you typically will purchase several guidebooks for any country to which you are traveling, and you do remind us that it's important to have an updated travel guide. It's so foolish for somebody to spend thousands of dollars on a trip and then use an out-of-date guidebook. But you like to customize your guidebooks. Explain to our listeners what that refers to and why you do it.
Oh, every guidebook has a different personality and a different passion. If they're any good, they're worthwhile. To me, guidebooks are $20 tools for, as you mentioned, $3,000 experiences. And I like to physically rip up the guidebook. I don't want to carry 4 books about Germany to dinner with me in Munich, but I would like the chapters from different books if I'm really, wanting to use that information. Some books are better for helping you understand the history and the art, and others are better for helping you understand the entertainment scene and so on. Of course, these days you can buy your guidebooks electronically also. So if you like to travel with a tablet, that works. But the bottom line is have information and take advantage of it, because there's so many mistakes and pitfalls out there, and there's so many scams that await you, and there's so many delights that can be appreciated or can be missed determined by how much information you've got and how good it is and how well you use it. I think we're the only people in the publishing business now that endeavor to visit every place every year in person. And our guidebooks are updated lovingly. I work with 100 people here at Rick Steves Europe, and many of us are out there just visiting each of these little B&Bs and taking these hikes and going to these new galleries and museums and sampling all the cultural wonders of Europe and then bringing it home, because we Americans, again, have the shortest vacation in the rich world. And you don't accomplish anything by saying you can spend a lifetime in Florence. I know you can, but I got 1.5 days. Now how should I use it? And that's my challenge, is to sort through all the superlatives and cut through all the data and let people understand this is how you use your precious vacation time to enjoy one of the great cities on this planet.
Specifically about Europe and this trip that some of my students are on right now, of course, I, along with many of their parents, felt a certain sense of trepidation because of recent events in Europe, and of course, that's kind of a perpetual concern. At one point, when you are talking about travel in general, you say, don't be a creative worrier. What do you mean by that term, being a creative worrier?
Well, a creative worrier, I just remember even when I was a kid, people seemed to sit at home and think about, what can I be stressed about? What could go wrong? It can't be this easy. Going to Europe on a road trip is not much different than going around the United States on a road trip. It's just you'll have more diversity and more cultural change and a language barrier to deal with. But, physically, it's about the same thing. In so many ways, Europe is more rewarding to travel because it's different and it's got all that rich culture and all that love of good food and everything. And people might worry about the safety, and I just think not so much being a creative worrier, but now these days the issue is don't be manipulated by commercial news media that is actually entertainment masquerading as news. A big change has happened in our society since Walter Cronkite used to say, and that's the way it is. Back then, networks were happy to lose money during the news hour because that was a contribution to our democracy, that networks would provide us news that was straight news. Some time between now and then, we've gotten more aggressive. Corporations have to profit maximize in the short term, and now corporate news media has to turn a profit. And when you have to turn a profit, you have to juice it up and sex it up and bloody it up and make everything a crisis. And I like it. I mean, it's just entertaining. It grabs me, but I don't let it make me a fearful person. There's more fear in our society these days than ever before. When I started traveling, people said, bon voyage. Now they say, have a safe trip. I just don't know what that's all about. You know, if you really understood the risk, you'd realize you're safer going to Europe than you are walking the streets of our country. You know, Europeans laugh out loud when they hear that Americans are staying home for safety reasons. If you knew the statistics as far as violence on the streets and so on, you'd take your kids to Europe tomorrow. But, you know, the bottom line for me is that it is safe to travel. You know, if there's 300 million people in Europe, if somebody is killed in a terrible event in Paris or a handful of people are killed, it doesn't make it any more dangerous than Chicago. In the last year, I've been in Egypt, I've been in Palestine, I've been in Turkey and Russia. A lot of my loved ones might think, Rick, do you think this is safe? And I've never felt that I've been taking any sort of unwise risk. And in fact, I think the irony is if people were so afraid that they stayed home, this world would become a more dangerous place, and the unreasonable fear that they were feeling might sadly become a reasonable fear.
Right.
It is exciting for Americans to get out and better understand the other 96% of humanity, and that's something I love to promote, and I like to promote it in a way that's just fun. Again, we've got 30 different guidebooks covering all of Europe. To me, Europe is the wading pool for world exploration. If your travel dreams are taking you to Europe and you don't have a lot of money, I think it's a good idea to equip yourself with some guidebook that can help you travel like a temporary local person over there, and by all means, make it happen. I take 20,000 people to Europe on 800 different tours a year. We go to Turkey, we go to Russia, we go to Ireland and Paris and Portugal, Morocco, and I've been doing this for 30 years, and you know, we have never been anything but celebrating and thankful for the opportunity to go over there. And it's the fearful people are the ones who don't get out very much. I think fear is really for people who don't get out much.
Right. You make a very important point about how Europe is something, you call it a complex mixed bag of the very old, the very new, and everything in between. And I think you take the time to say that because it's important for Americans to have some sense of that as they go there. Because you also make the point of, Europeans are, in a sense, reaching for their future while these tourists come and are reaching for Europe's past. So it can make for an interesting situation sometimes.
Oh, it is funny because we want to see people at the well with a jug on their head, you know, and that just makes for a nice photograph. But the young people in Europe, they're going to the big cities so they can be more modern and more international and more, you know, on the edge like we like to be. I think it's just the layers of history in Europe are just so fascinating. You know, in southern Spain, it's not unusual to be in an amazing church that's sitting on the ruin of a destroyed mosque, that's sitting on the rubble of a destroyed church, that was built on the rubble of a destroyed Roman temple, that was probably built on the rubble of a pre-Roman holy ground, and all of that layering is right there. And when we get all excited about some horrible event in our day and age, it's important to remember there's never been a time when there weren't events like this. What's new now is 24/7 news that puts it in our face. And what also is new is an opportunity for us to learn about each other and expect our neighbors to better understand the variety and the diversity on this planet. And for me, when I travel, I'm putting together sort of a collection of different strands of different cultures. And when I come home, that's my favorite souvenir. I can weave different sensibilities and different taste treats and different dimensions of cultures into my culture. I become more thankful than ever that I'm an American, and at the same time, I become a better citizen of the planet, and in a lot of ways, that's the best souvenir. And I am just going to Europe. I've been spending 4 months a year in Europe every year for the last over 30 years now, and it never gets old, and the people I meet are just amazingly warm and welcoming, and the lessons just keep getting better and better, And I'm always amazed about places I discover that I never even knew existed. And all of a sudden, wow, where did this place come from? It's been there all along, and you can just never exhaust Europe of what it has to offer.
Hmm. The book is Rick Steves' Europe Through the Back Door, updated for 2015, and further updates available at www.ricksteves.com. The book is full also of photographs and interesting maps and charts. One of my favorite maps lays Europe over the North America, since we're on the same latitude, to give one a sense of, well, if you're in Oslo or if you're in Lisbon, this is sort of what it might sort of feel like. It's just one more way to make Europe a little more approachable for all of us, so we can access all of its wonders. Rick Steves, I thank you so much for all of the great work that you do and for joining me today on The Morning Show to talk about this and your other books. Best wishes to you.
Thank you very much, and happy travels.
And this conversation with Rick Steves was recorded a year and a half ago. The time is 8:30, and it's time for part two of today's morning show here on WGTD.
I fall to pieces. Each time I see you again, I fall to pieces. How can I be just your friend? You
And that is the incomparably beautiful and memorable voice of the great Patsy Cline, one of the great legends of country music. And Patsy Cline is back on the stage of the Racine Theater Guild. It is with great excitement that the Guild remounts a play that they did a number of years ago to huge acclaim and great success, a play called Always Patsy Cline, one of two different shows that the Theater Guild has done centered around this iconic country western singer. And Always Patsy Cline is back this year. And with us for this portion of the morning show is Doug Instanis, who is the artistic director of the Racine Theater Guild and director of this production. And we have Patsy Cline herself, Kate Potter Barrow, back in the title role of this wonderful show. Playing her friend Louise in this production is Ann Malerskoff. And with us also as well is Zach Johnson, who has a long history at the Theater Guild and is back on this stage as the music director of this production. A warm welcome to all four of you. So glad to have you here for the morning show. Doug, say a word about the decision to bring back Always Patsy Cline and remind us how long ago it was done the first time.
Oh, yes, my hard question. Was that 13 years ago?
15.
Mm-hmm. And then, wow, long time ago. So, well, because people every year asked, when are you going to bring that Patsy show back? So finally we said, okay. And then they go, really? Are you? Well, it's one of the shows that people remember because her music is so wonderful. And Kate did such a marvelous job last time that it stayed in people's minds. And, you know, I never... to be honest, I was not a big country and western fan prior to doing these shows. Oh, geez, I have to sit through this. I don't know. And then I'm saying, hey, I know that one. Well, I know that one. That's not country. Well, you know. And all of a sudden, it's amazing how many songs you know when you don't think you know any of the songs. And that's because she was a star. And there's a reason why I remember those songs is because they're wonderful songs and they tell great stories. And so people like to listen to them. And you know, Patsy is not your typical country and western yeehaw star. She broke a lot of new ground for the entertainment industry and women performers, and people remember that. And so I really, 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 really liked the show, and I really liked what we did with it. And, you know, there's a lot of great memories. And sometimes you just have to give people what they want, and they want to see Patsy again.
Yeah. Were you the director 15 years ago?
I was.
What does that feel like to be remounting? I mean, we should remind people, although a lot of people know, that we just did Joseph again. But in that case, you hadn't directed the production they did 20 years ago.
Right.
And in so many respects, this was a
vastly different production from that one. In this case, I assume we're talking about a production that is very much like the one 15 years ago.
Yes and no. You know, as I told Kate, and of course Anne is new, she was not in the first production, was we can always go back and do exactly what we did before and it was good. Or we could do something better if we wanted. We could try different things and say, well, let's try this or let's try that. And I had very few rehearsals with Anne. We got together and we said, okay. She goes, I was thinking this. Okay. I was thinking this. Okay. And she put in a couple new bits, and she brought a new life to it, and that brings a new energy to Kate. And while I think Kate remembered a lot of the music, the set is different, and some of the blocking is different, and some of the things that we're doing are a little bit different. So, you know, as I say, whenever I remount a show, I can always go back and just copy it, or we can throw away the things I didn't like the first time around, make those better. And, you know, I'm doing some different things with lighting. And so it's a different production. It's the same
and
music.
It's a different version. And some of the music is also different.
It
They've
is.
Combined pieces together. They've changed some of the songs. So this new version is a little bit different than the last one.
Oh, yeah. In terms of even what's on the page.
Right.
Yes.
A couple songs are totally different. And interesting to know why they made those changes. Maybe the copyright ran out on the song or something, or somebody else bought the royalties and they had to remove it. But it's a fun show, and the actors, it's all about these two ladies having a good time together. And because we have a different cast, there's a different energy and different things that are going on, and I think people will have fond memories and really enjoy our new production.
Right. So in some ways it's the best of both, because it, for people who fondly remember this show from 15 years ago, they will not be disappointed. It will very much be a similar experience, and yet it will not be a carbon copy of what they saw 15 years ago.
Absolutely.
Although in some ways that probably would have been easier to do, but not better to do.
Right. You know, but I have a lot of artistic, talented people. Zach brings a new energy, and Anne and Kate bring all these energy. And really, I always say, the best shows I direct, I do the least amount of work on, because I put the right people in the right spots and let them have freedom. And all I have to do is say, you know, maybe a little bit here, or move over, you're out of your light. And they're very creative. They brought a lot of great ideas. And it's just fun to sit back and watch, and then I get credit for it. So,
before we let you go, I want you to summarize the plot as it is of Always Patsy Cline. This is not a plot-driven musical in the way that some things are,
no.
but there is something of a story, and explain who these two women are.
Right. Well, I think they tried to throw in as many wonderful Patsy Cline hits as possible and then tie them together in a storyline. And while, you know, the play is about Patsy Cline, really the play is about Louise. Louise's memory of Patsy and her stories and her letters, and she was a real person, and this is based on there's a biography. I think it's a biography that has a bunch of these letters in there, and so it's really
so letters exchanged between these two women.
Yes,
correct.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about when she met Patsy and her experiences, and it's told through the eyes of a fan. So Anne does a wonderful job of telling Patsy's basic life story, and how it made her feel, and as a fan. And I think that's the wonderful thing about it. You see Patsy through someone who loves her and adores her and has been with the ups and downs and shares all of the good and bad memories of that. So basically, Louise Anne tells Patsy's story, and then Patsy comes in and recreates those moments that Anne so fondly remembers. And then there's a number of really wonderful moments together where they're actually in the kitchen or with each other or corresponding. So, all it is basically a retelling of her story through all these wonderful monologues that Anne has to do.
Lucky and, you.
Yes,
yeah.
You know. And, well, and to a certain degree, you know, Patsy's got 27 songs, and that's hard. Mm-hmm. But she's got Zach to play the music and to remind her what song is coming up next and what's going on. Anne has pages of dialogue and nobody there to help her. So it's a shared
it's a really a shared show. These women work very hard and on stage all the time, and they're doing a marvelous job.
And I know that you were anxious to try to recreate not only the beautiful singing that we all remember from 15 years ago. Whoever was going to be Patsy, we wanted it to be that musically satisfying an experience again, of course. And the other thing was that Kate and whoever shared the stage with you, what was her name again?
Trisha,
had a wonderful chemistry with each other. And we really believe, those of us in the audience, we absolutely believed that friendship between these two women. So I know you were really anxious for that chemistry to be recreated with whoever was your Patsy and with whoever was going to be your Louise. As the director, what did you look for in terms of trying to figure out where that chemistry would best emerge from?
Well, I think Louise is a really hard part because she's got to be funny and she's got to know a lot of dialogue and she has to sing. And in this version, there's a little bit more singing that goes on. And Anne is a really great singer. Matter of fact, you know, I have her, you know, hitting a few extra high notes because I want to exploit her skills a little bit on that. But the ability to command a stage is hard, and Kate can do it through song, and Anne can do it through the dialogue. But you're up there by yourself, and you have to have a rapport not only with the other actors but with the audience. And Anne talks to people in the audience. She relates directly to them. Kate does the same thing through song, talks directly to the audience. And one of the things I talked a lot about with my cast and Joseph is everybody needs to walk away feeling that the actors eyeballed me. They saw you there. They talked. Mm-hmm. They sang directly to me. And I think in this show, everybody will think that either Anne or Kate saw them in the audience and talked directly to them. Mm. And you walk away feeling that you're really part of the show. And then, you know, we get them to clap. We get them to participate. Anne hauls people down on stage and dances with them. And Kate, it gets right to the audience. She's shaking hands with people. She's making contact with people. So, you know, I think this is just a love fest between the actors and the audience.
That's what it's all about. Doug Instanis is the director of this production. Doug, I know you have pressing matters to take care of, so we'll let you go. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
We have still with us Kate Barrow and Anne Motherskoff, who are the two singers and performers, actors in this production as Patsy Cline and her friend Louise, and Zach Johnson is with us as well, the music director of this production. Kate, say a word about the real Patsy Cline and what makes her a distinctive, compelling figure, beyond just the fact that she had a beautiful voice and sang beautifully. What else is compelling about her story and who she was?
She was a woman who showed great strength and guts at a time when women weren't allowed to. And she fought very, very hard to do things her way, sometimes even being labeled negatively by people who worked with her. But she fought for what she believed in, even though she was untrained, even though she came from a tiny little town and came from absolutely nothing. She so believed in what she was doing and wanted to do it so badly and did it with such passion and love that she fought at a time when women simply did not and could not. And she changed the music industry. She changed the way people sang. She changed the way they breathe. She changed the way they enunciate. She was absolutely brilliant and completely untrained, which I love. I mean, it's just... And I will say, the first time I did this, I was concerned about you because we worked together. And I thought, oh, my gosh, Greg is going to roll over in his chair and walk out. When you hear me singing this way. But as I've practiced it, as I've tried to recreate her sound, which is all wrong, she swallows L's. She goes to the diphthong, the second sound of a diphthong, constantly. She growls. She slides down. She swoops up. She does glottal stops constantly in the midst of a vowel. But it is brilliant, and the other thing is that it's incredibly fun.
Yeah.
It is so much fun to sing like her, and you can just see her passion. She also enunciated in such a way that you can understand every word she sings. Mm. And the other person that they compare to her almost anytime they're talking about the way in which she sings is Frank Sinatra. Their phrasing, the way that they sing, the way they do vowels, and so on and so forth. They knew how to sell a song. And then the other thing you hear from anybody who loves Patsy Cline is she sang with such emotion behind what she did that it touched people's hearts.
Mm.
And it does to this day.
Wow.
Absolutely touches their hearts.
You know, I know we've had this conversation before, and before we started rehearsal, I, kind of like what Doug was saying, I wasn't really familiar with Patsy Cline, but as soon as we started rehearsal, the same thing went off in my brain. Oh, I know this song. Oh, I know this song. In fact, one of them, Stupid Cupid, we had done a couple summers ago when we did the production of The Marvelous Wonderettes, and I had no idea that that was a Patsy Cline song until you sang it. And listening to her and in listening to how you portray her and interpret what she was doing, she does have this raw.
Oh, yes.
But it's raw and it's natural, but it's honest. Mm-hmm. And I think people really relate to that and they connect with that on an emotional level.
Yeah, there's something very forthright and very generous about the way she sings, and that's very much who you are, too. Kate, how different does it feel from 15 years ago? And I guess I'm asking that on a couple different levels, and this will eventually be a nice segue to Zach joining us. Does it feel a lot different in your throat? And does it feel a lot different in your head and your heart? I mean, now versus 15 years ago.
I believe that I'm more comfortable with it now than I was 15 years ago. I was more worried about what people would think 15 years ago, and now I don't care. No, that's not true. I do care. But my appreciation for her has grown immensely over time, and so it was really easy to go back to it. I had not listened to much Patsy Cline in the 15 years since I did this the last time, but when I put that first CD on, I felt like I was going home.
Mm.
And that's truly what it feels like. I just feel like I'm going home, and I know that this woman would have been my friend.
Right.
She's my kind of people. She sticks up for folks. She loves people. She's easy to get to know, and that is certainly exemplified in this love story that occurred between the two women. And I like that down home honesty, and again her guts. So it's a little bit different, but actually easier in some senses.
What I got to see tonight, I would say that as wonderful as it was 15 years ago, it feels even better now. I mean, like there is something even more comfortable and fully authentic about it, as though it's grown even closer to you, or you've grown closer to her, or something, in these intervening years.
Yes, I believe so.
Say a word about the enormous difference it makes to have a really capable music director. I mean, that makes all the difference, doesn't it?
I was thrilled when I found out it was going to be Zach. We have worked together in many different aspects of our lives. He actually taught my daughter violin way back when, and I've seen him in a million productions. And we've worked on different shows here, Honky Tonk Angels we did together. And to work with somebody of his talent and his dignity and his class is just absolutely a thrill. And the group that he's put together is exquisite. And so I knew we were in such capable hands that there's been no worries at all. And what a gift that is.
Been a very easy process. I'm the one person, I think, who came in loving Patsy Cline after listening to everybody here. I love Patsy Cline, so it was easy to slide into these songs because I was very familiar with them. And putting together the band was essential too. But once we knew it was Kate returning, we kind of knew it was going to be easy peasy. Not to say that we didn't work things, because of course we did. But, you know, we knew it was going to be an easy fit. And I guess the kind of thesis statement of what everybody's been talking about in terms of Patsy Cline's singing was kind of an intuitiveness to it and the naturalness of what she was doing, and the kind of the freedom that comes from not being taught the rules and not knowing the rules and not feeling scared about not achieving the things that you're supposed to do. She just sang because that's all she knew how to do. And, and I think there's a little bit of that is kind of the relaxation of singing these songs again And sometimes they feel like an old friend when you have those 15 years, even if they're not songs that you sing every day, they're somewhere in you.
Yes.
And it wasn't hard to unearth them. Mm-hmm. And there's an easiness to bringing them back. And then it's like putting on really comfortable old shoes. And it's really, it feels good.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, and of course, Patsy Cline, I think any great singer sings the way they're supposed to sing.
Yeah.
Not they don't. A great singer is not someone who sings like someone else sings. Mm-hmm. You sing like you're supposed to sing, the way you were born to sing, and that's what she did, and that's what you're trying to do in evoking what she was like as a singer. If you would, I would love it if you would sing a line or two that would just give us kind of a sense of what you do to try to kind of evoke her kind of musical essence. So what would a line be?
See the pyramids along the Nile. Watch a sunrise on a tropic isle. Just remember, darling, all the while, you belong to me.
There it is. Now, I'm just curious, especially 15 years ago, I'm asking, did you have to sit down and listen and dissect what she did and then sort of figure out how to emulate it? Or was it more a case of, it sounded like it was simple to do, but was it mostly imitation, just listening to her and then just kind of trying to parrot what she did? Or did you take it apart?
It was hiking with dogs and listening to it while I was out hiking in the woods and trying things out. And there's an intellectual, oh my gosh, this is what she's doing. When you hear the sound like the swallowed L's, it's like, oh, she's holding everything back in her throat. Or, oh, she's doing this. And the glottal stops, of course, are pretty easy to figure out. But, you know, it becomes very intuitive. And it's very natural. And really fun. Zach just asked if I'm holding up okay. And I said, yeah, remarkably well. As gutsy as she is in her singing, there's something about it that's also right and healthy for you, because I'm doing just fine in spite of everybody on the crew having bronchitis and, you know, things like that, and our weather being so terrible here. So,
Well, I think the thing that impresses me so much about Patsy's voice, that I haven't said this to you, it is exactly the same thing in what you're doing, is the incredible breath support. That to me is the most impressive thing about the way she's singing, and it's the most impressive thing to me about what you're doing. So the fact that those two things are the same is also very indicative of the fact that you're doing it right.
Right, and you bring a couple of the same strengths to bear.
And not overthinking it.
Right.
Because it would be really easy to overthink it.
Right.
Right.
Before we let the ladies go, I want to make sure that we have a chance to talk a little bit about this love story. That's what Kate called it, this love story between Patsy and Louise. And Doug made mention of the fact that this is not the stuff of fiction, but in fact based upon something very real between Patsy Cline and someone who really lived. So, Anne, tell us what you know about the real life Louise.
Well, Louise Seeger was, like I said, she's a real person. She met Patsy Cline. She was what I'd probably call a super fan at the time. And they corresponded through these letters. Now, the other thing that I've read is that with the people that wrote this play, that put it together, they kind of took the letters and created this storyline that told a lot about Patsy Cline through the eyes of Louise. However, the actual Louise Seeger didn't know about this. I think her daughter heard from someone who had seen the show, oh, I saw this show about Patsy Cline, and I think your mom is in it. So,
oh my word.
Yeah, and she actually was not that pleased with the characterization, because the character is kind of the comic relief. She tells the story. She has these funny bits and everything, but she's not exactly the way the Louise Seeger was, her personality and everything. It wasn't based on that. It was based on the letters.
Okay.
And I also kind of interpret it, it's all because Patsy had other pen pals too.
Yes.
She corresponded with many different women. So the character of Louise Seeger was a real person, really lived, but I think the play kind of incorporates all of those women,
yes,
in a way, you know, even though it focuses on Louise.
So, in a sense, Louise is a surrogate for everybody who corresponded with Patsy.
Yeah, I guess. She's the everyman, or the everywoman in this case, so that we can get to know Patsy Cline. She's the vehicle for that, I think. And they were, she says in the play that Patsy was like the sister that she never knew she had. So they connected on that level, and Patsy was a very forward-thinking, ahead of her time, very modern for those times. Louise also had those elements. She was she was a divorced woman. She had raising kids on her own. She was
in electronics.
She was in the technical field, right? Which was unusual for a woman back in those days. So I think that they just instantly connected. I think they were very kindred spirits.
Very much so.
Is the content of any of the letters, actual letters, part of this play?
Yes, yes. In fact, we read one in the second act. I read one of the letters to the audience. And it's, I think it's pretty much straight from the letters, from the biography.
From the biography, yeah.
Okay. So other letters, too, are available for people to read? I mean,
there's an entire book of letters with Treva, who was the person in charge of Patsy Cline's fan club. So there's an entire book of those. Yes.
Wow. So we can kind of get a sense of that.
I think you can find some of them online, too. I found a few of them there, too.
So, Kate, what prompted you to use the words love story to describe this relationship between these two women? In what way was it a love story?
It was one of those situations where there was love at first sight when they first met each other at the bar where Patsy was performing. And it was a connection, an instantaneous connection. And their stories were similar. They were both going through difficulties with Louise was already divorced. Patsy was going to become divorced very quickly. And they just connected on this absolute basic level. And women have a real gift of becoming friends in ways that just support them forever and in ways that I don't think that most men have that same kind of connection. And so truly a love story where they bonded and it was a forever bond. And I bet if they'd seen each other again, it would have been just like they had never been apart. It was that kind of a friendship and that kind of a love story and such support for each other. That's love.
And that's one of the things celebrated in this great show, Always Patsy Cline. It opens tomorrow night at the Racine Theater Guild. And Kate Potter-Barrow is back as Patsy Cline. And Malerskoff plays her dear friend and correspondent, Louise. And Zach Johnson is the music director of the production. It runs 2 weekends. You can call 633-4218 for ticket information. And tickets are going very, very fast. Thank you, everybody, for joining us to talk about Always Patsy Cline. And best wishes.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, we are going to be hearing in part two of tomorrow's program more about this production of Always Patsy Cline
from Zachary Scott Johnson, who is the music director. Also tomorrow on the morning show, we're going to be hearing from best-selling novelist Don Winslow. His most recent novel is called The Force, and he wrote it after engaging in several years of intense research, interviewing a number of different New York City police officers and finding out what the day-to-day grind and pressures are for